Welcome to Dare to Struggle, Dare to Win, a monthly podcast by the U.S. Human Rights Network, addressing human rights issues in the United States. I'm your host, Sacagawea Hall. This month, we speak with Andrea Carmen of the International Indian Treaty Council about the upcoming visit of the UN expert on the rights of indigenous peoples. We also speak with Gerald Lenoir, Executive Director of the Black Alliance for Just Immigration, about their mission and the upcoming Black Immigration Network National Conference. Andrea Carmen is a member of the Yaqui Indian Nation. She has been a staff member of the International Indian Treaty Council since 1983 and their executive director since 1992. Andrea has had many years of experience working with indigenous communities from North, Central, South America, and the Pacific.
Thank you, Andrea, for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Can you start off by telling us a little bit about the International Indian Treaty Council?
Sure. The International Indian Treaty Council was founded in South Dakota on the Standing Rock Indian Reservation in 1974. As a result of a lot of social and political activism in the United States and Canada in particular, among indigenous peoples, the formation of organizations like Indians of All Red Nations and the American Indian Movement and others, that fishing rights struggles in California and the Northwest that were calling attention to, number one, the existence of indigenous peoples. A lot of people around the world thought we were extinct by that point. Whatever the intention was of the colonial governments, we were certainly not extinct, but our rights continued to be violated. And the Treaty Council was coalesced around the standing of indigenous peoples as nations, as evidenced by the nation-to-nation treaties that we had with countries like the United States, over 300 ratified treaties, however, that continued to be violated, and the lack of redress in the United States system. Indian peoples at that time, you know, marched across the country, took over BIA buildings, went to court, tried to meet with legislators, and even engaged in armed occupations like Wounded Knee, and the only response was more repression, jailings, killings, etc. Leonard Peltier is still in jail from that time in prison, as most people know. So the decision in 1974 was to seek a voice and a redress for human rights violations in the international arena as nations with treaties, and we were sent to the United Nations at that time. And as the first indigenous organization that began to work at the UN, we received consultative status in 1977 with the UN Economic and Social Council as the first indigenous organization to be recognized in that capacity. And then last year, we were the first indigenous organization to be upgraded to what's called general status, because we began to work not just in the human rights arena, where we've continued in a very focused and strong way, but also branching out to a lot of different other areas of the United Nations work that directly affect our lives and survival, whether it be UN Food and Agriculture Organization, the climate change, and other environmental discussions, biological diversity, intellectual property. All of those areas of the UN directly impact the human rights of indigenous peoples, as well as our survival and our lands and territories. So the IITC has continued to be very active, and the UN Rapporteur on Rights of Indigenous Peoples was one of the campaigns that we took on, and actually was successful in getting that UN mandate, the first one set up to specifically investigate human rights violations against indigenous peoples in 2001. And the mandate's been renewed a couple times, and this is the first time coming up here, beginning at the end of this month into beginning of May, that the UN Rapporteur on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples will officially visit the United States.
And the current Special Rapporteur, I think, Professor James Anaya?
James Anaya is a law professor at the University of Arizona in Tucson. He established the Indian Law Program, which is very well known nationally and internationally. And he himself is an indigenous person from the United States. He's an Apache. So, you know, it's really important to us that he holds that role. And as he's been all over the world investigating specific human rights violations that have been filed by indigenous peoples, whether they're on mining or relocation, marginalization, racial discrimination. There's such a variety of kinds of violations of human rights that indigenous peoples experience all over the world, forced displacement from lands. But this is a very unique visit to the United States because it's the first time that he's actually done a comprehensive investigation of specifically the implementation of the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, which encompasses a very wide scope of inherent rights of indigenous peoples and is now the internationally recognized minimum standard, as it says, for the survival, dignity, and well-being of the indigenous peoples of the world and the rights that it contains. And it's interesting because, of course, when the declaration was adopted in September 2007, only four countries voted against it, and that was Australia, New Zealand, Canada, and the United States. And the United States was the last of those four countries to actually reverse its position and come out in support with some qualifications, which we don't accept. But even though the United States was the very last to get on board, they are the first country that is being investigated comprehensively by the United Nations on the implementation of the declaration specifically and all the rights, the gamut of rights that it recognizes for indigenous peoples, including very strong treaty rights.
Right. So Professor James Anaya, who's the Special Rapporteur on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, will be looking closely at how the United States is complying with the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples?
Exactly. And, okay. And this is something I know that we've talked about a lot in the U.S. Human Rights Network and in context of the CERD and the UPR process is the lack of accountability of the United States in particular, you know, of course, other countries as well, to the human rights commitments and obligations that they've made. So this is a very important step forward for us as indigenous peoples, but I think also for the whole human rights movement to look at an investigation specifically on implementation and compliance with a human rights commitment, in this case the UN Declaration on Rights of Indigenous Peoples. And he's going to be going across the United States and meeting with indigenous peoples in tribal communities, in universities, in cities, and also meeting with the United States government in Washington, D.C., and the variety of different agencies and entities on the federal level. He's also meeting with some state officials as he goes across. I know he's meeting with the governor of South Dakota, for example, when he's there, and to talk about how these rights are being implemented, how the United States is upholding its commitments that it's made as a support country of the UN Declaration on Rights of Indigenous Peoples. So it's very exciting, really, because it gives indigenous peoples an opportunity to address the specific concerns they have, whether it's protection of sacred sites, removal of indigenous children from communities, mining, non-implementation, in particular, of free, prior, and informed consent on a whole variety of issues, and violation of treaty rights. There's such a range of issues that indigenous peoples are challenged by in the United States. And this is the opportunity for representatives to speak in their own voice to the rapporteur about how they feel their rights are being violated, or if there is positive steps towards implementation, then, you know, it's a chance to present that as well. And also how indigenous peoples are implementing the rights in the declaration. For example, he's going to be visiting the Yanni Da'a Tribal School in Alaska, which is the only tribally run school. It's run by Chickaloon Village Traditional Council that is also going to talk about their fight against a coal strip mine in the Matanuska Valley in their traditional territories. But that the tribe is actually implementing Article 14 of the Declaration, which says Indigenous peoples have a right to control their own education system. So he's also going to be meeting with Indigenous peoples in South Dakota at Sinte Gwashka Tribal University at Rosebud Reservation, which is another example of an Indigenous nation implementing their own education system, and in that case on the university level, to keep their language and culture strong as well as to provide quality education to their tribal members.
Well, you've given us a lot of detail about the visit, what's expected of the visit, and how important the visit is. I know that once he finishes his visit here, he'll be compiling a report to the United States and also to the United Nations. How does the report that he writes in his visit impact the work that you are doing?
Well, he will give a concluding press release at the very end of his visit, which is May 4th, a press conference as well, probably on the East Coast, maybe Washington, D.C. again, which is where he starts and then does a big loop all around, which takes him all the way to Alaska, back through South Dakota, Oklahoma, Tucson, Portland. There is also an opportunity, and I want to stress that, through his website and also through the IITC webpage, which is www.treatycouncil.org, for online submissions for those that are not anywhere near these places where he'll be holding open consultations. After, there will be a public report, and it will be presented to the UN Human Rights Council in September, which is when the Special Rapporteur on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples regularly gives his annual report. I'm sure this visit will be included, as well as other country visits he's been doing in the last year. And it's going to provide an opportunity with specific recommendations to the United States that we can then use to further the policy changes and changes in practice that Indigenous peoples are calling for. It's an opportunity to highlight and shine that light, international spotlight, on the struggles of Indigenous peoples in the U.S., and also, hopefully, the impact that U.S. policies have on Indigenous peoples from other areas. One area that we work out a lot is the export of banned pesticides from the U.S. into Indigenous communities like mine in northern Mexico, but you know, other places, and then, you know, the environmental impacts and health impacts are devastating there on the ground, but also, you know, these substances travel to the environment, especially to the Arctic. So the Arctic Indigenous peoples in Alaska are going to be talking about their health impacts as well from these policies. So it's an opportunity, I think, not just for Indigenous peoples in what's considered the United States, but those who are affected by United States policy that impacts Indigenous peoples. And we'll be able to utilize those recommendations in our work and as one more pressure point on the United States to make changes that are necessary for Indigenous peoples to fully experience and exercise our human rights that have now been recognized internationally through the Declaration, but, you know, also through the United States' support of the Declaration. They are now a commitment and obligation of the United States.
Well, it sounds like you said, it's a very important visit, and it will also provide a tool for your continued work in making sure that the human rights of Indigenous peoples are recognized and upheld. Thank you for joining us. Can you give the website one more time so people can find out more information on the International Indian Treaty Council and how they can participate even if they're not in the city where the consultations are happening?
Yes, it's www.treatycouncil.org. Also on the Treaty Council Facebook page, you can get the entire agenda and contact information for each of the site visits that he's been making across the country. And I'll give the easiest website for people to log on to find out more about the UN Rapporteur is UNSR. That stands for United Nations Special Rapporteur, UNSR.JamesAnaya.org. It has all the information. It links to the UN website for the Special Rapporteur. It's just easier letters on that one than the UN site. So you'll be able to find out about the Rapporteur, about the visit, about the different specific site visits. The information is posted there, as well as how people can send in information directly through online method if you're not able to make any of the specific events. And we really look forward to hearing his report. It's been his reports for other countries, other investigations he's done have been very strong. The indigenous peoples are very pleased that they were heard by the rapporteur, and their issues were highlighted in the way that they presented them. I've sat at the Human Rights Council and have countries actually complain and challenge his reports, not very successfully, but I know it shines that spotlight, and it does away with impunity, and it's important for us to realize that, you know, the United Nations is interested in the plights of our communities and the struggles that we have, not just for indigenous peoples, but for all the grassroots communities. This is a resource that we have to put pressure on governments like the United States government, and we have found it very important and very useful and very affirming for indigenous peoples as we continue with our grassroots struggles for human rights.
Thanks for joining us, Andrea.
You're welcome, and
okay.
Thanks to the U.S. Human Rights Network as well. We count the network as very important allies for our struggles, and we hope to also offer solidarity back to all the communities and struggle that you're working with.
Our next guest is Gerald Lenoir. Gerald has been a leader in progressive social movements for over 30 years. He is currently the executive director of the Black Alliance for Just Immigration. He is also a board member of the National Network for Immigrant and Refugee Rights. Gerald is co-founder of the Priority Africa Network, which advocates for progressive U.S. policies towards Africa and organizes dialogues between African Americans and Black immigrants.
Gerald, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Before we go into the conference, can you tell us a little bit about your organization, Black Alliance for Just Immigration?
The Black Alliance for Just Immigration, or BAJI, was founded in 2006. And if you remember back to those days, we saw the massive demonstrations in support of immigrant rights, the largest demonstrations in the history of this country. And a group of us who had been working together over the years in different organizations, both African Americans and Black immigrants, came together and decided there needed to be a voice within the African-American community in particular, but also that also represented Black immigrants, that brought a progressive point of view to our communities around immigration issues and really looked at the issue of immigration as a racial justice issue. So we began organizing in our communities and began to do speak out and to do education and training and public speaking. So 6 years later, we're still here.
Can you talk a little bit more about why, particularly at this point, it's critical for African Americans in particular, but I guess on a broader range for Blacks in this country, both African Americans and Black immigrants, to take a stance on just immigration?
Yes. From my point of view, the struggle for immigrant rights is part and parcel of the continuing struggle for racial justice in this country that started with the struggle of the Native Americans against the genocide and in the transatlantic slave trade. It's another chapter in that struggle for racial justice. And when we look at the attack on immigrants of color, what we see is that the white supremacist right is building its membership and organizations around an anti-immigrant platform. But the attack also includes African Americans and other people of color in the United States. We will have to look only at some of the repressive legislation that has been passed in Arizona that condones racial profiling, that has banned ethnic studies in the public schools, and now that has banned affirmative action. So our point of view is that this struggle against racism is a broad struggle that we have to enjoin, whether it be attack on African Americans or whether it be attack on immigrants of color. The other point is that the economic exploitation that is going on globally is impacting all of us. So immigrants are driven out of their countries because the U.S. and European powers are distorting economies throughout the world, and over 200 million people do not live in their country of origin, and many of them are refugees of the global economy. And so people come here looking for work, and then we are, as African Americans, are pitted against them in the struggle for economic justice. And so we say that we need to join with immigrants of color to ensure that we all get economic justice. And so we have a vested interest in supporting immigrant rights.
Right. So part of that movement and part of that work includes the National Black Immigrant Network Conference this month, April 22nd to the 24th. The then conference is going to be held in Atlanta, Georgia. Can you tell us a little bit about the conference?
Yeah, the Black Immigration Network, or BIN as we call it, began in 2009. We had our first national gathering in Baltimore, and we decided that we wanted to try to build this as a national network of groups that are led by African Americans and black immigrants from the Caribbean, from the African continent, from Latin America, to look at how we can build a network that challenges the status quo, that challenges the racism and the white supremacist right, that begins to look at how we can bring our communities together in struggle, and how we can begin to share strategies and begin to network among ourselves and to become a force within the immigrant rights movement, within the racial justice movement, and begin to shape policies that we think are in the interest of our communities. So this conference is really a conference that we're having in Atlanta, Georgia, to look at how we can consolidate the network and formalize the network and come out of Atlanta with a strong work plan, campaigns, and looking at how we become a force within the movement and within this country.
So what can people expect from the conference? What are some of the panels and the topics?
Well, some of the topics that we'll be looking at is who's behind the movement against people of color. Who are the actual players that are behind the scenes in the white supremacist right in particular, and how can we counter what they're doing? We're going to be looking at migration patterns, who's coming to the United States from Africa, Latin America, and the Caribbean, and why they're coming and how globalization is impacting them. We're going to be looking at specifically what's happening in the South with this whole slew of anti-immigrant bills that are being passed in Georgia, Alabama, South Carolina, Mississippi, looking at what that pattern looks like, what people are doing around it, and how we can strengthen those movements, but also looking at the attack on voting rights and how that impacts both African Americans, Latinos, and other people of color. So looking at kind of what organizing is going on in the South and how we can support that organizing. We're going to be looking at the criminalization of African Americans and immigrants of color and how we can help to join those two movements, the movement against the prison industrial complex and the movement against the detention regime that immigration and enforcement, immigration customs and enforcement has been perpetrating against immigrants of color. We're going to be looking at issues like gender, race, class, and migration. We're going to be looking at models for capacity building in black communities. We're going to have caucuses around faith communities, labor and immigrant rights, how to resource our movement, and we're going to be having a workshop on communications. So it's a pretty broad conference. We also are going to be electing a steering committee coming out of the conference and ratifying a structure so that coming out of there, we have an organizational form that can take us from the conference into work in the field and in the country. So a lot of these workshops will come up with recommendations on what the Black Immigration Network should do in terms of policy issues, in terms of campaigns, in terms of training and technical assistance.
Okay, that sounds good. So to end, can you give us the website for BAJI and for the conference? And
yes, the website, if you're interested in more information about the conference, is blackimmigration.net. And the phone number is area code 602-845-9248. And the email address is info@blackimmigration.net.
Okay, blackimmigration.net.
Yes.
Great, thank you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
The U.S. Human Rights Network is dedicated to building a people-centered human rights movement in the United States. For more information about the network and how to become a member, visit www.ushrnetwork.org. We also want to hear your feedback. Get in touch with us by emailing info@ushrnetwork.org. Thanks for listening to Dare to Struggle, Dare to Win. Join us next month.